Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable competitive future in Cork business.
Hi there and thanks for joining us. Coming up on this episode, just what is happening with Cork's housing market and what impact could that have on our recovery post-COVID? We'll also speak to IBEC about why being at the heart of Europe is really, really important for Ireland right now. But we wanted to put the spotlight on housing in Cork from the point of view of the construction sector. And I'm delighted to be joined by two prominent figures in the building trade, Stephen McCarthy of Astra Construction and Michael O'Sullivan Green of O'Sullivan and O'Leary. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I thought it was a good time to bring you in purely because we seem to be still going around in the same circle, effectively talking about a problem. Yes, there is progress being made, but nothing close. I mean, if I can begin with you, Stephen, we shared a stage on a conference and you listed all the reasons why housing was challenging. Have any of them gotten any better about 3 or 4 months after?
Not really, to be honest, yeah, because I think as we all know, change is always slow, right? And like most of our challenges are coming from the system rather than from the construction part of it. And like the whole world situation is very volatile. The whole planning situation is very cumbersome between judicial reviews and planning appeals and everything else. And like the big challenge for all of us, as we know at the moment, is getting on site. Like building houses is still the easiest part of our job. It's actually going to work, getting to work, the cost of getting to work, the level of bureaucracy you have to go through to get to work. And all these delays just take time and time and time. Mm. Right?
And just remind people who are listening who might know you, Stephen, the type of house that you build and where you build them.
Like I'm building Cagline. I've been building Cagline for the last 50 years. Right? And like, the whole thing has changed so much in that period of time, it's actually unbelievable to think about it. The level of change, like the standard of housing has improved dramatically in that period of time, no question those about it, right? The size of the houses we're building, if you go back, say, 20 years ago, a three-bed semi was give or take 900 square feet. The standard three-bed semi today is give or take 1,200 square feet, right? So the quality of the house is so much different, so much better. It's like chalk and cheese, quite frankly.
And tell me, Michael, what kind of house do you build, first of all, and what challenges are you experiencing? Are they very similar to your colleague?
Yeah, I suppose we operate mainly in the private housing market. We deliver new homes, generally speaking, to first-time buyers, but that's not to say that we don't do some detached homes as well, mainly on housing developments. And obviously, like everybody, we do some social houses as well as part of the Park 5 system. That's mainly what we do. And I suppose I'd kind of agree with Stephen to a certain extent. I think there is signs of progress in terms of the commencement notice numbers. Say for Cork, I think there was commencement notices for 3,100 houses last year, which was up, I think, around 20% or so in the previous year. We find that things are quite busy on site, a very strong demand from homeowners, particularly first-time buyers. We are gearing up the site that we can deliver more houses on a weekly basis. So, an operation of our size would do approximately, 60, 70 houses a year. We're gearing up to do that. But again, we could have a very quiet year next year if a couple of planning decisions don't come true, because we're working on a cycle that you must, part of our raw material is the delivery of land and concrete, and land is just one element of what we have, and particularly land with infrastructure available. And whereas we see everything in a positive light, the big concern that we have as a company is ensuring that we have enough in development land in place that can take housing.
Okay, and that's been an ongoing discussion for some time. But Stephen McCarthy, I have to put it to you that there's people who'll be listening to this now going, oh, here we go, say it's always someone else's fault other than the builders. You get a particularly bad rap. Do people understand the challenges that you say you're facing? I mean, like we heard Michael talk there about the zoning issue. Then you have to add on the issue of cost. Then you have to add on the issue of planning. Then you have to add on the issue of financing. There's an awful lot of people to blame before we blame the builders, is there?
But see, Jonathan, like, you see, builders by their nature, like, we are risk takers. No doubt about it, right? You see, as I said to you a while ago, like, building, the actual building part of this business is easy. Like, that's what we enjoy doing most, is building, right? And, like, but, like, it's the, like, if we're your business, you're a risk taker, right? And that's part of what we do, right? Right? But, like, we have to comply with so much regulation today, so much bureaucracy today, so much everything. Like, we're walking to restraints all the time. The regulations, department guidelines, procedures. It's like, it is a challenge. Like, bureaucracy has taken over this industry, quite frankly.
And like, whose bureaucracy is that? Is it the local authority? Is it central government? Is it Irish Water? Whose is it?
Well, you've Irish Water, you've the Department of Environment, you've the Central Bank, right? You've all these planning guidelines, the planning regulator. So they're all dictating terms to us what we do. So, like, we then in turn have to kind of keep changing all the time to comply with regulation. So, like, we don't make, like, at the end of the day, we're only the provider of services. We don't make the policy decisions. We're just walking to the system, quite frankly.
Okay. And how much then, as a result, Michael, of the amount that people are paying for houses right now isn't actually going into the house? It's going towards those other agencies that are looking to take a cut. And I'm including things like VAT on that. I'm including your service charges, all of that kind of thing.
I suppose that's really the frustrating part of this conversation when anybody discusses house prices and new house prices in particular. You know, secondhand houses are a different market. There's different drivers to that. But the driver in our business is literally the cost and an acceptable margin so that we can actually survive as a business, you know. And about somewhere between 45, depending on the development, between 45 and 50% of the money that a homeowner is buying is going on what I classify as soft costs, you know. And I suppose the really frustrating part of that is that, I'll just give you an example. You know, there's been a lot of conversation about Part 5 and the fact that the amount of land that goes into Part 5, which is delivery of social and affordable houses, has increased from 10% to 20% in recent planning legislation. Like, the net
But hang on, that's a good thing. We need to have this type of housing there that can be affordable.
Yeah, absolutely, it's a good thing. But I suppose to understand it, Jonathan, you know, when we go to buy land, we buy, say, 10, and up to that legislation, what we do, we give one of those and then we build a house on it for them, and the other 9 homeowners who are buying the 9 sites pay for that site. So that decision to increase that to from 90% to 80% now means that when we buy 10 sites, 8 people, we give 2 of them away at agricultural value to the local authority, and the other 8 people who are buying the houses have to pay for those 2 sites. So that decision alone added approximately 10,000 to the price of a new house. And you know, all the talk about the Part 5 is that it's a positive thing. And now, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. You know, I'm not qualified to say that. But what I do, okay, thing I do know is that the other 8 private first-time buyers, you know, primarily first-time buyers, are the people who are paying for that extra site.
Okay, I hear you. I understand where you're coming from, where that frustration is leveled at. They certainly don't put that on the advertising slogan for a new house coming in. One of the great conundrums for me, Stephen, is the idea that apartments still aren't a better option. Because in every economy, in every product, there has to be economy of scale. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be making things in bulk. It should be easier to build apartments. It should be easier to reduce the footprint of what could be a home, stack them on top of each other, use modern building methods. Yet I don't think we've had a private apartment built in Cork since 2007 still.
Because, Jonathan, it's very simple. It does not pay to build apartments in Cork at the moment. It's as simple as that. Like in any business proposition, right, the first thing you do is market research, what the market wants, right? Secondly, if I can build this product, can I make it pay, right? And, like, quite frankly, at the moment, it's not viable. But, Jonathan, like, there's one very basic question we'd ask here. If building houses or building apartments is so profitable, why are there so few people doing it? For one simple reason. It doesn't pay.
Well, what about the argument that will be levelled at it, at ye, and at all developers, and I'm just going to put it out there because people will say it, probably don't greed. It sounds to the fact that you're not making as much money as you'd like. You'd make a profit, but you wouldn't make as much money out of that profit, and that's why you're holding back. That's the argument. I'm not saying it, but that's what people will say to you.
Jonathan, talk is very cheap, right?
I make a living out of it, don't get me wrong.
You see, unfortunately, we have to live in the real world of commerce and trade, right? And we have to be able to pay our bills every week and every month, right? And if we're not getting enough money to pay out our bills, we don't stay in business. It's as simple as that, right? And I have no doubt, talking to my colleagues in this business, right? We all keep reinvesting, we all keep spending. All our profit goes back into the business at all times, right? Right, because you're buying land, the harsh reality is, Jonathan, we don't get paid for anything if we finish it, right? So you have to fund everything, you have to buy land years ahead. So the amount of money you need today to fund a building operation, quite frankly, is staggering.
Okay. I don't mean to insult either of you gentlemen, but you're hardly in the flush of your youth. And I can say that having met you on a regular basis. Michael, obviously, you're still a young man before I offend you completely, but would you expect there to be a rush to development amongst a younger generation of builders or financiers out there? Do you think that there's going to be Michaels and Stevens in 20 or 30 years' time? Or are we going to see all of that responsibility handed over to outside bodies or maybe people from outside the state?
I think youth is coming into the industry because I suppose the likes of us, we like building things, you know. That's the reason we're in this business in the first instance. There's a lot of talk about apprenticeships and about people coming into the business and all that kind of stuff. But you know, yeah, I mean there are young people coming into it. Are there as many as we'd like to see? Probably not. Are things improving? Yes, they are. So, it's not as if, you know, we'll finish up building houses at the appropriate time and there'll be no one there to take our place. The industry is a strong industry, you know, and it's not that long ago then the industry was delivering 80,000-90,000 houses a year. Whatever both the rights or wrongs of that, the industry is capable of doing that. So there is an ability within the industry to deliver what has to be delivered. But again, we go back to the basic thing. Once we have a field that we can build on, we'll build. That's the easy part. The hard part is getting to the position where you can do that to make sure that the sewer is there, the storm is there, the water, the infrastructure, the roads, all that kind of stuff, and that you have planning permission to proceed. That's the challenge.
Okay.
That's the issue. That's the problem that the likes of us face every day of the week.
And the funny thing is, and I'll finish up on this with you if I can, Stephen McCarthy, that's not the narrative. The narrative is a menagerie of birds coming in, swooping up properties like yours. Now, I'm guessing there's no developer out there who wouldn't turn down somebody rocking up and buying all their houses off them at once. But is that your motivation for building houses, that they'll sell them all to some fund that will rent them out in perpetuity?
Jonathan, I can say I don't categorically. I'm building family homes in Carrigaline the last 30 years, right? I've always had a policy of not selling to investors. My primary market has always been family homes, and I've never changed my philosophy as regards that. I mean, as late as 2 years ago, I was approached by an affordable housing body to buy 50 houses off me. I turned them down, right? Because my primary market is the first-time buyer market, and I've always been loyal to that. And we get a pile of repeat business from families and first cousins and friends and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters. And that's the core of most house builders building big sites. Their primary market will be the first time buyer.
We leave it there for now. We'll talk to Conor O'Connell of the CIF in just a minute to continue this conversation. But gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Stephen McCarthy of Astra Construction, Michael O'Sullivan Green of O'Leary and O'Sullivan. Thanks for joining us on Red Business, folks.
Thank you,
Jonathan. Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
So that's what it's like for people who are actually involved in construction right now in Cork. Lots of challenges, far too many to kind of list quickly. Conor O'Connell, Construction Industry Federation Director in the Southern Region, is with us now. Conor, you heard what Michael and Stephen were saying there. Are there concerns / complaints typical of what you're hearing from other members?
Yeah, what I heard there anyway, Jonathan, in those interviews was a frustration with the system. And these builders have been building for generations. They're in the business for decades. They're used to building. They want to go building. But unfortunately, there's too many constraints in relation to the built environment at the moment, from planning, procurement, design, judicial reviews, the legal system. There's significant constraints that limit their ability to deliver. They're capable of delivering a lot more than what they're delivering at the moment. But look, it's that whole regulatory environment and cost environment at the moment that causes them concerns, you know. But that's not the only story, Jonathan. You'll have heard from them as well. Look, 3,100 commencements last year in Cork. If we look at the annual demand in Cork for somewhere between 3,500 to 4,000 units, we are getting there. And certain policy measures such as the LIHAF funding, the site services fund, you know, the help to buy scheme, the introduction of the shared equity scheme, and in relation to apartments, hopefully the LDA initiative Project Tushig will ensure that we'll have private apartments. Hopefully private apartments commence in Cork for the first time in many years this year. So there is a lot happening, Jonathan, to try and get over those issues at the moment.
But the thing is, Conor, you and I have discussed at great length at various different events and various different issues. No silver bullet. This can't be solved in one go, despite the best efforts of everybody involved. And if that's the case, does that mean we're kind of making progress? All those little positives that you've included there, we're inching in the right direction.
Absolutely. If you go back to 2018, there were 1,600 units completed in Cork. They're thereabouts, Jonathan. In the space of 4 years, we've doubled our output in Cork. That'll tell you, that statistic alone will tell you the ability of the industry to deliver and to respond to positive public policy measures. And you must remember that we had, what, a shutdown of the industry for 6 months or greater within that 2 year, within the last 2 years. So the industry is capable of delivering and will deliver once the right public policy measures are in place. But unfortunately, like everything else, events take over, and what we've seen post-COVID is material cost inflation, etc., which may impact on viability in certain locations. But nevertheless, the story at the moment that I see from right around Cork, and people can see it visually themselves, Jonathan, the number of sites that have opened up, from social housing projects, the approved housing bodies are now fully resourced. The local authorities now have a multi-annual budget for social housing and affordable housing. We'll have a local authority affordable home loan in place by the end of the year. Shared equity, the continuation of the help to buy is going to be key for hard-pressed first-time buyers. So all of those measures, you know, I think they are. There's a positive outlook there, yeah. Jonathan.
When we're dealing with all of those issues that are coming through right now, what the lads were telling us a minute ago is that getting onto site, getting where they need to build houses is proving a little problematic. Is that a symptom of dysfunction? We tried to fix a very broken system after the crash. Did we overcorrect a little bit, or have local authorities now been superseded by another development agency that's kind of sitting above them, and Bord Pleanála is above them, and you also have judicial review, and it can take a long time to get out and done?
It is. Look, the biggest frustration, I think, in the industry is that whole regulatory environment that's constraining supply, constraining delivery. Look, it's my own personal opinion that we overcorrected in terms of our regulatory environment. We introduced costs unnecessarily into the system. Look, for instance, a big issue for me at the moment, and you can hear from the two builders earlier, is about land supply into the future. Unfortunately, time and time again, when we introduce regulation, there are unintended consequences which weren't thought of at the time. And that's the biggest frustration with the industry. However, you know, Jonathan, we're meeting those challenges. But I think the biggest challenge at the moment will be the whole cost environment, you know, with materials.
Yeah. And also we've probably got staffing issues coming up, because everybody has that issue. Not to mention the small issue of a global conflict potentially happening that we weren't expecting at the start of the year. So there's always going to be pressures. There's always going to be things coming through. But look, you and I are glass half full guys, Conor. Cork is about to take off like a rocket. We are led to believe that we need to find somewhere for people to live. We need to find somewhere that they can come, and it doesn't become prohibitively expensive to move to Cork to take on some of the new jobs that are coming through. Are you concerned that a lack of availability of housing, given that it normally takes quite a lead in time to get to where we need it to be, could throttle that growth?
Look, the way I look at that, Jonathan, is that Cork is better placed than I think any other region in Ireland. I know others may disagree with that, but look, at least in Cork, we got builders, we got house builders, developers that are actually developing, Jonathan. There's no other regional city in Ireland has the housing output that Cork has or anywhere near it. So because of, I suppose, the skill set within the region, the history of a strong development community, we are actually delivering across all of the built environment, unlike any other regional location in Ireland. So look, we are delivering. So our message to inward investors and the FDI sector in particular is that at least in Cork, we are providing the housing, albeit it's been slow coming and we've seen an increase in the last year or two. But nevertheless, we are delivering the units and will be delivering the units in the future.
Conor O'Connell, Director for the Southern Region for the Construction Industry Federation. Conor, thanks so much for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
IBEC has launched a new campaign which says Ireland has an opportunity to be a leading voice within the EU to take on the challenges of our time. And boy, aren't they challenging. It's called Stronger Europe, Stronger Ireland, Competitive, Innovative, Sustainable and Open. Director of EU and International Affairs at IBEC is Pat Ivory. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks for joining us. Look, we are at a very challenging point. I don't think anybody at the start of the year would have predicted a Russian invasion of Ukraine and the instability that inevitably follows from that. It causes the jitters, doesn't it?
It certainly is a very grave situation and an unwelcome development. I think that in terms of direct impacts on Ireland, they will be less than elsewhere in the European Union, who are closer geographically and economically to Russia. However, the scale of the Russian-Ukraine crisis will have indirect effects on commodity prices and business sentiment and uncertainty. So we'll have to wait to see how that develops over the coming period. But it's a very serious issue, and Ireland, as a very committed member of the European Union, will work very closely with its European partners to address this. And the Taoiseach, as you know, is working with the other heads of state in terms of the EU response.
Yeah, I mean, we're no longer a peripheral rock on the edge of Europe. We are part of the European Union. Our position actually made stronger by Brexit in many ways, when people said it would damage our relationship with our biggest trading partners. Realistically, Ireland needs a strong position in Europe because it's hard to paddle our little canoe without them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's coming up to 50 years of Irish membership of the European Community and the European Union, as it's now known. The support of Irish citizens at 83% remains among the highest across Europe and is consistent with the 1972 vote in support of our membership. And EU membership has been very positive. It's clear it has helped Ireland on its journey from an inward-looking protectionist economy to the highly competitive, innovative, globalised hub it is today. And the single market and an outward-looking approach have provided great opportunities for trade, you know, attracting investment and fostering a skilled and flexible labour force right across Ireland, in not only for the Eastern Dublin region, but also for a huge investment in the Cork region and the Munster region. And a strong EU has helped shape a strong Ireland with economic and social benefits flowing both ways.
Mm. The timing of this campaign, therefore, is designed to just strengthen those ties. Ireland economically is doing well. It's doing well because of our position in Europe. There's no denying that. What do you hope to achieve from this new initiative?
Well, one of the things we are emphasising is that as one of the 8th longest serving EU member states and a net contributor, Ireland must be a leading voice for an open, outward looking and pro-enterprise EU. And we have identified four different areas in our strategy, which will, we believe, from a business perspective and also from a more general societal perspective, have huge benefits, not only for Ireland, but also the European Union.
So when you look at the future, I mean, again, the uncertainty that's there now, fingers crossed, is temporary uncertainty. I'm sure resolutions will be found at some point, although it might be bumpy in the interim. What long-term benefits do you see of a further engagement, a stronger Europe and stronger activity from Ireland in setting out where the EU needs to travel?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, one of the things we have said is that the EU needs to focus on its strengths and competitiveness. And this is the first theme or pillar of our strategy. So what we're saying here is that a focused EU can help build an economically competitive Europe to support and sustain a social Europe. And that EU dynamic must be that it respects member states' own competencies to deal with its own labour markets and its social policy model, including here in Ireland, but also that the European Union and we work with our partners in the European Union, both from a business and a government perspective, to add value by embracing competition and strengthening the EU single market and increasing research and spending and boosting education and skills.
And finally, Pat, on that point, you mentioned the fact the East Coast got a fair bit of benefit from economic growth in previous years. We've done well here in the South, but what are you hoping that IBEC will be able to do for businesses in Cork through this campaign?
Well, I think Cork is a hub for foreign direct investment in a number of sectors, in for example, particularly in the pharmaceutical sector, also in the IT and digital sector. Major companies have set up in Cork. Also, there's an ecosystem of SMEs which have developed in the Cork region, servicing those companies. In addition, I mean, Cork is one of the centres for our strongest domestic industry, the food industry. And, you know, if you look at the dairy industry in Cork, one of the strongest parts of the dairy industry in Ireland is in the Munster and Cork region. So what we plan to do in terms of this, and this goes to the second two elements of our strategy, is helping Ireland and the EU lead an inclusive and innovative digital decade. And we believe that businesses in Cork can thrive in doing that and can make a major contribution to not only Ireland, but Europe's leadership in digital. And on the climate and sustainability side, we believe that by working together with the European Union, understanding the different challenges for different companies in Cork and across the region, see how did they make their model more sustainable, how they respond to climate change, but taking on board the cost of doing that, but also the opportunities that there are in the climate area, wind energy, etc. And finally, in terms of an openness to trade and investment, Cork has a major contribution to make here, including with one of Ireland's major ports being located in the centre of Cork City.
Pat, we really hope that that all comes to pass, because it sounds as if it'll set us on the right path for the future. Pat Ivory, Director of EU and International Affairs at IBEC, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
And that is it from this particular episode. Ciara McDonough was the producer. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus, our new video series, is up and running. You can download it right now from redfm.ie. But from the podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.